There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
But I think that's very low effort, just like picking on one thing. It's not like I would pick on Jane for being old all the time, would I?
So... Oh, we were having a nice conversation there, Dan, and you ruined it. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of The Bakedown Podcast. You are joining us for our Series 4 throwback series, where we are going back to Howard series and having a look at all the lovely bakes from that series. We are on Episode 5 today, which is Biscuits and Tray Bakes Week. And with me, as always, we have the lovely Jane, Dan and Howard. So hello, everybody. How are we all doing today? And what did we think of Biscuits and Tray Bakes Week?
What was it about, Biscuits and Tray Bakes? Why put the two together? I didn't get this. And could you tell watching it that I didn't get this? First of all, I have to say, went in on that first day and I got a terrible hangover. So I do look a bit green and I'm thinking, oh, it's not too bad because actually my tray bake's quite simple to do. But when we were set the brief in the first place, I thought it had to be a biscuity tray bake. Because it seemed to me that it was biscuit week. And you seemed to do, like, oh, I'll just do a square Bakewell tart. Oh, I'll just do a cake in a square tin. It's like, what's this about?
This seems to be a theme, Howard. You misunderstanding the briefs, or maybe they're not telling you all the information beforehand. Is it becoming clearer as you watch it back?
But when you have no frame of reference, you don't know. And this is the thing, is that quite a few times I'd gone into the tent thinking that we were all going to do something and nobody else seemed to really have the same idea. So I do feel your pain. But yeah, it's only when you compare to everyone else, you're like, oh yeah, why did you do a flapjack? What was that about, Howard? What was going on?
I just thought somebody else will do a millionaire shortbread, something with a biscuit. But I thought I'm going to rule that one out. I ruled out kind of Rocky Road because I thought that's going to be too complicated to do. But actually, Glenn did a really good job, I thought, of a tipping kind of Rocky Road type thing. It never occurred to me that anything done in a square tin basically becomes a tray bake.
Well, that was the brief given to the viewers, yeah.
You know, when we get given the brief, they usually put a little line of pictures at the top to sort of illustrate what they're talking about.
Not at all. I checked because I still got the brief and it was just two lines and it basically said a tray bake that can be cut into squares and it has to be sweet. And that was it. No illustrations or nothing. And then what really riled me was that, you know, when they at the beginning, when Mel and Sue describe what they want us to bake, and it said, and Mary and Paul would very much like everything you make to be made from scratch. And I'm thinking, oh, I've got a bit of grapefruit marmalade in this. It never said you had to. had to make everything from scratch in the brief.
I was going to ask, because when you said grapefruit marmalade, I was like, how on earth is he going to do that in the time? And the answer is, you didn't.
I didn't, but boy, did Mary go mad about that. I mean, I thought it was in the final edit, but it wasn't. Repeatedly, you had 2 hours, you could have made your own marmalade. And it was like, I don't know. So it was interesting, actually, because obviously I'm not going to give away which week I leave at this point. But that week, I actually made a pot of grapefruit marmalade and sent it to the remaining bakers for their breakfast.
Oh, like that's so sweet. So already full of stress before we even start.
Yeah.
Which is interesting because in the little talking heads at the beginning before the signature, you say that you're feeling quite calm. So let's start with our signature challenge, which, as we've just discussed, was a tray bake to be cut into identical slices. And I think we've sort of established now that Mary's idea of a tray bake is something baked in a tray. So there we go. Who knew? Mm. We had 2 hours for this challenge and we had a nice range of tray bakes. We had brownies, we had a lot of Bakewells, and we had some sort of banoffee, millionaire shortbread, and Howard's flapjack style tray bake. I think yours sounded really nice, actually, like a chunky flapjack.
It had the signature Howard twist of hints of health to it, which, you know, good for the bowel movements and a little bit of fruit in there.
Sorry, it's a little early in the day for that, so I think we're going to talk about Howard's bowel movements.
Bit of fibre. I thought yours sounded really nice, actually, very delicious. But I did think immediately, oh, it's quite simple, Howard. That is quite, sorry.
And I tried to kind of make it look more arty by masking off strips and then doing that kind of yogurt drizzle over the top. And it completely disappeared, didn't it? Mm. It was like...
I loved your little sad face. You were like, yeah, what's happened there is it's just all melted with the heat.
I like the comment, it's a simple bake. Do it. It's very me. You know, a simple Howard. Oh, bless you, darling. I wouldn't have thought you were simple at all.
I think you also described your baking style as rustic as well, which is quite nice as well. Simple and rustic.
Oh, yes, that as well.
Mm. Again, I just think even at this point, I suppose in subsequent series, people have got the message that actually they want to see a range of skills and they want you to show off a little bit, even though it's supposed to be a kind of everyday signature bake. I don't think I quite got that at that point.
Well, Mary said at the beginning, God, I want each layer to complement the rest. And I thought, they didn't mention layers.
No. They didn't tell you.
Lots of layers. And I'm thinking, oh, dear. Yes.
If I counted correctly, I think 3 or 4 people did sort of a Bakewell slice style cake, didn't they? So, but was it only one did pastry and everyone else just did sort of cake?
Yeah, I believe it was Ruby that did some pastry on the bottom of her Bakewell and everybody else either did a cake or a biscuit.
Yeah, well, I think Ruby sort of gave herself a lot to do with the pastry as well. But I think the Bakewell slice is a good idea because it's sort of like, you know, you've got a layer of jam, you've got a layer of cake, showing off different skills, and it's something that I quite like. It's one of the things that you guys may not have noticed, or maybe you have, is that there's quite a few bakes that are sort of signature British bakes that I don't even think of as being a British thing because they're just the food that we grew up with. But yeah, Bakewell slice, Bakewell tart, it's sort of not common outside of England at all, is it? So I thought it was quite nice that we had a very English style tray bake that lots of people went for. So I thought that was nice.
Yeah. I mean, I love a Bakewell. I mean, it's always very popular when we do classes with Bake with a Legend. The Bakewells, it never ceases to amaze me just how often we fill those classes up. I would have thought everybody in Northern Hemisphere has done the Bakewell tart class, but it's so, it's really popular and always really successful as well. So yeah, it is like people always knock the English, don't they, for having rotten food, or they certainly always used to, or was it just the French used to say that we couldn't cook? I don't know, but we have got some lovely bakes, and Bakewells are one of them, actually. So I was delighted to see Millionaire Shortbread. Who invented Millionaire Shortbread, do you suppose?
The Scottish invented it.
Well, they invented the shortbread. Did they put the caramel on it?
No, they did invent Millionaire. I don't know if they invented shortbread, but they popularised shortbread. But I don't know if they invented it. They definitely invented the millionaire shortbread. That's definitely a Scottish thing. Yes.
That's still the UK. That still counts.
We are good, aren't we?
We are. Let's put ourselves
We're amazing.
We probably invented flapjack as well. In fact, we probably invented it all.
Let's say we did. And we're not talking American pancakes, flapjack. We're talking about the healthy granola oaty thing.
Oh, healthy is a stretch, honey, but yes.
Yeah. It's,
all the sugar in there. Something I'd really like to talk about with you guys is Glenn doing marshmallow in 2 hours. I mean, when he said he was doing marshmallow, there were definitely some raised eyebrows. And then he whisked it all together and shoved it in the freezer. And I thought gelatin was a no-no in the freezer. So what do we think of that?
I've never tried to do it in that time frame. Whenever I've made marshmallow, I've just sort of pushed it into a tray and left it for a few hours and come back. I've no idea how quickly it can be done. I don't know about putting it in the freezer at all. I would never put a jelly, or sorry, I'll translate my remarks into English for the Americans, a jello into the freezer, because that will make it sort of go all, I don't know, it sort of breaks down and becomes like almost gritty lumps of jelly. I don't know what's going on with that.
I know that particular recipe made it into the cookbook for the year. So
it
I
did.
Can just check. I'll have a look.
Ooh.
See how.
Yeah. Oh, yes,
please do, Howard. Yes.
I know in one of the series at some point, it might be in a later series than this, because of course this was a while ago now, they were trying to get something to set. And Paul did say, oh, you shouldn't stick it in the freezer because it won't set. But in my year, I made a jelly to go in my Mirror Glaze cake, not knowing that you shouldn't put jelly in a freezer. And I did set mine in the freezer. It was only a thin layer and it was in there for not very long, but it set brilliantly. And I would say with marshmallow, in the past, have been a great fan of Australian MasterChef. If you haven't watched Australian MasterChef, it's a great series. And very feel good, like Bake Off. And people have about 3/4 of an hour or an hour to produce a dish very often. So they have to get things done really quickly. And people have certainly made marshmallow in an hour. So it obviously can be done. And Glenn proved that it could be done because that marshmallow looked fantastic that he made, didn't it?
Looked fine, yeah.
Beautiful, very bouncy.
It just says in here, just with icing sugar, place in the fridge to chill for about an hour until firm. So they... According to this, they're just putting it in the fridge for an hour.
Oh.
Well, there
Send
you
us
go.
A screenshot of that recipe, Howard. I'd like that marshmallow recipe.
Yeah, I would only ever put it in the fridge. But to be honest, I just leave marshmallow at room temperature. I don't even put it in the fridge. Because the gelatin, the temperature helps. But the main factor is time to set gelatin.
Now, Howard, once you'd made your tray bake, you took it out of the oven and you seemed to say to whoever was filming, yes, it is a simple bake. So did somebody sort of look at your bake and go, oh, that's a bit simple?
I don't know. I think that...
Or were they talking about Howard?
Possibly both.
People asking you all the time sort of questions to prompt a bit of discussion. So it's possible that they might have said, are you adding anything to that? Or are you just leaving it as a simple bake or something like that? Yeah,
I don't think I'm giving too much away to say that, yes, the team will just ask you leading questions all the time to make you talk about stuff. So often it looks like you're just randomly bringing up things apropos of nothing. But no, you're being asked questions all the time in the tent, aren't you? You're being asked to explain everything. You put another ingredient in the bowl and they're like, do you want to tell us what you're doing? And you're like, I believe it would be self-evident, but they want to hear it.
And you also have to speak in sentences because you don't have, so you can't hear the person who's asking the question. So if they say, well, how many children have you got? You go 4, which I haven't.
Yeah.
And they go, but 4 is very random. Isn't it? I have got 4 children.
Let's go back to Jane. 4.
No, that's Jade, which is on the golf course. 4.
Indeed.
Sarah, you're quick this morning.
Very quick.
Thank you. I'm quick always. I'm hysterical. I just never get a chance to say anything when you're around.
Sorry, I know.
love to you all. Howard, I really enjoyed another sort of classic Howard moment. It's like when you were making the petit fours, you said something about like, oh, I'm going to make it about cheese and biscuits. It's a cheesy biscuit. Well, I enjoyed another one that we had this week when you said, it's a breakfast tray bake and I'll be displaying it on a breakfast tray. Oh, it was wonderful.
I don't think Paul didn't like that tray. He said it reminded him of when he'd been in hospital at some point. So I thought, oh, I didn't want to
think about that.
Oh. I hope you didn't get marked down for your tray. That would have been terrible.
It's a bit hard to avoid that, isn't it? How are you to know that? Well, let's go back to talking about the different bakes we had. We had a lovely sort of mixed berry and almond crumble from Christine, which looked beautiful. Love a berry crumble.
What about Kimberly? Can I ask you, Howard, this? Were you still at the station tent where you were trying other people's food, or did you not do that really? Because Kimberly's looked fascinating, but although they said the textures worked, I had a hard time imagining how that would be because it had like a Florentine on top. And I would have thought it would have all been a bit... Did you try that one?
No, we didn't. No. It was a shame, really. I don't know if I tried any of these. I did try a little bit of my own. And I thought, oh, yeah, they're probably right. It is a little bit... It's dodgy.
What a shame, because we used to try everybody's bakes. They used to bring us some up to the green room while we were waiting.
Yeah, we got told that was only in the later seasons. And the early ones, which I guess that qualifies you, Howard, they didn't get a chance to eat them. And they made a point of making sure the bakers could try each other's bakes if they wanted to. But that's obviously the difference between season 4 and 7.
It's a shame. Did she bake? I was interested in... I thought Kimberly's looked great. Did she bake the Florentine on top, do you know? So I don't know what she had on the base. I couldn't work it out.
I think she just put it on after, didn't she?
I would have thought in order to get that crispiness, it needed to be baked separately, but I don't know.
And it stayed perfectly on the top, didn't it? It didn't sink down, so...
I don't remember, but I assume she baked the cake fully and then spread it over the top. And maybe it showed us, but I didn't see that. But she must have let it cool on there and then cut into squares. That's a fascinating idea. And again, often I feel like I say this in every recording, I would never have thought to have done that.
No, me neither. But actually, so she put in 5 different types of cherries, didn't she? Well, if you count damson.
I don't think I can name 5 types of cherry.
Well, I struggled when I was writing it down. I had to keep running it back and seeing what was that? So there were 3 different types in the cake, and then she did, with her topping, she had black cherry and damson. Maybe she stuck on the Florentine with a bit of that jam or something. I just thought it looked really pretty and so neat. I loved it, because I love a Florentine as well.
I must just show you, I was just checking to see whether there was another tray bake. The only other tray bake is Mary's tray bake. Ginger cake with white icing on top.
That's just cut into squares?
Yeah, don't think that's quite the layered thing that we were thinking of.
Well, there's two layers. The glamour, Howard. So Kimberly's, I thought, looked great. And I feel so sorry for Glenn, because he got, his looked fine. Like, it was a man-sized portion. Paul said it looked grotesque.
I know, I thought it was harsh.
That was really unfair. It looked lovely. I mean, a good chunky tiffin with marshmallows in it. It was great.
I mean, listen, you know I like to say mean things for effect sometimes, just for the lols. But, like, I would never call someone's food grotesque. I just thought that was really unnecessary.
I agree.
I thought it was good that, hats off to Glenn for actually challenging that. And he sort of said, grotesque. And you could see Paul kind of almost step back a little bit. They were a bit shocked that someone had challenged his words.
It was a very gratuitous critique.
Do you think people challenge him more these days? Because we were all a bit sort of, oh, all right then, Paul, sorry. But people, not this in this series particularly, but in the more recent series, since it's been over to Channel 4, it seems like people do challenge Paul a little bit more and stand up to him and joke a little bit.
I did tell him that his challenge was ridiculous. I think people quite enjoyed that. But yeah, it's funny how things you say in the tent, like which you do not think of as being big things, get sort of blown up and taken as... But yeah, I didn't find Paul scary at all. But then I mean, Jane will disagree with me vehemently, I'm sure. But I generally find his critiques pretty fair. There was never a time when he was like, I don't like it. And I was like, well, I completely disagree with you. I always agreed with his criticisms. So I never really found him scary. I found him quite fair. I can't believe I'm saying that.
Oh, why would I disagree with you? I do think he was fair. And I didn't think he would give you a comment that actually you couldn't go, yeah, all right, fair cop. That's what it's like. But it wasn't that that scared me. I'm very happy to be critiqued. But I think he'd got this persona by the time I got there. That, you know, there's this persona of the silverback gorilla sort of prowling around the tent, glaring at you and sort of shaking his head and raising his eyebrows. From when I look back to these old series, I think he's softened in the last sort of 3 or 4 years. Maybe he had to be in balance with Mary, who, on the face of it, always said something positive. And now Prue is more straightforward, I think. Love Prue. And perhaps he doesn't feel the need to be quite so silverback gorilla. And perhaps he's just getting older and can't be bothered.
I think the dynamics are different as well, aren't they? I think if he did say anything sort of really offensive, Prue would be right in there and sort of challenge him, I think.
Mary seemed kind of positive and polite about things. She would sort of, you know, be a little bit gentle about her critiques. And so maybe Paul was a good contrast then. But yeah, Prue's pretty straightforward. I didn't feel like she was sparing your feelings so much as it appeared that Mary used to do.
I think Paul's a big fan of the for the television teasing. You know, I know, Dan, you've spoken about this before, and maybe possibly that's where the whole Paul's flirting with Ruby and that's the only reason she's getting ahead came from. I mean, it's trashy tabloids, we'll say anything, but he does seem to always be sort of gently teasing Ruby a bit, maybe because she was so down on herself and he knew that he would get a little bit of a rise from her. I don't mean this maliciously at all, but
is that flirting?
Maybe sort of that's where that came from. Well, you know what the tabloid press is like. They can take anything, can't they? But if that's where that came from, and, you know, Paul's a fan of using words like grotesque when he could have just said it's a bit big.
Yeah. Well, Paul is a bit of a flirt, actually. I don't, like, straight men love flirting with gay guys because there's no danger. They just enjoy the attention. So Paul would flirt with me relentlessly on the show. But it's just for fun. Like, it's obviously, like, it's just, but then no one would take that seriously, would they?
I didn't feel that Paul was particularly flirting with Ruby. I mean, she was very young then. Did you think so, Sarah? I just didn't think so.
And then I didn't.
No, it was utterly ridiculous.
The papers, you go, really? That completely passed me by.
Oh, it's crazy. I just think because she was so down on herself and so unconfident, Paul would just sort of, you know, tease her a little bit. Not nothing that he wouldn't, that he hasn't done for other people on previous years. Not that he hasn't, like, teased Rahul as well, because he was unconfident on your season, Dan.
Yeah.
I just think it's the tabloid press making something out of nothing.
I think also he tends to, once he's got something on somebody, he tends to use that as something to spark conversation. So the idea that Glenn's very, very busy doing things and have you practiced this, and Ruby was very much pigeonholed into, oh, you're winging it all the time, you know. So, and Francis is obviously style over substance. So, you know, he's got these things that he can talk to people about, really.
But I think that's very low effort, just like picking on one thing. It's not like I would pick on Jane for being old all the time, would I? So...
Oh, we were having a nice conversation there, Dan, and you ruined it.
Thank you, I know. Sam. Thank you, Dan. I'm not going to join in with this one, I don't think, because I could be really mean and I don't want everybody to see my dark side.
I'm like, Jane, everyone still thinks you're sweet and lovely. Don't ruin it.
Well, let's just go back to our signatures. We had a few positive comments, especially in Kimberly's. I mean, we've talked about how nice it looked, and clearly the judges agreed. Rob's didn't seem to go too well as well. His blueberry orange tarta de Santiago frangipane style Spanish tray bake. Apparently that was underbaked and raw inside. What did you guys think of that?
Well, here's the question. Which is a worse insult, stodgy or soggy? I'm thinking soggy is a step even further, isn't it? So whilst There's a bit of stodge on yours, Howard. I think soggy is never a good look for any kind of cake, is it?
No, I think stodgy can be just how the consistency of the bake, but soggy implies that you've done something technically wrong.
I mean, Tarta de Santiago is a lovely thing. My daughter lives in Spain, and it is a lovely, lovely thing. So often, though, with these big tray bakes, as I'm sure we all know, you know, very often a recipe will say bake for 30 minutes. But I find, as with a full-size bake or tart, because a lot of people tripped up in my series making that in a technical challenge, it can take a long time to cook, and it can take, you know, certainly not 30 minutes. It can take 40, 50, sometimes 55, even an hour to get through. And maybe he just ran out of time, you know, in the tent. Because the idea is lovely. I'm not sure I would have put whiskey in the topping, but mascarpone is a brilliant topping, I think. So you whipped up this either some cream or something else just to lighten it. It should have been good. I think perhaps he just didn't bake it long enough and underestimated in the tent how long it would take to bake.
So that's our signature challenge. I think definitely with Kimberly pulling out ahead is doing really well. And I think Christine as well. And Rob, and sorry to say Howard, possibly Howard, not at the top of the list, shall we say. So we move on to our technical challenge where we had to make 18 tweels, 9 with a little sort of swirly bullseye pattern and 9 rolled into cigars and dipped in chocolate. An hour and a half for this challenge, so not very long at all. Howard, you've spoken in classes about the dreaded tweel challenge. I think it's fair that you go first on this one.
I didn't know what I was doing, did I? Could you tell? Could you?
Yeah.
The only thing that I was so, so pleased about was that I knew how to make a paper piping bag. And it was like, yeah, I know how to do this.
Yeah.
And I'm watching other people struggling and I'm thinking, I could do well on this one. Anything else how to bake the tweel, how long to bake them. I didn't realise that you can pop them back in. All of those things are just a nightmare.
In fairness, if it's something you're making for the first time, as is often the case with the technical for people, you're bound to make lots of mistakes, aren't you? Especially if you've never done it before. And tweels are fiddly. I mean, I can do them now, but I think my first couple of batches were pretty disastrous. So it's just a shame they got captured for national television for you, Howard.
Well, Dan, that's actually probably a very good segue to briefly talk about our next bake-along class with your lovely self, which, of course, is incorporating both the tray bake and some lovely tweels. That's going to be on the Sunday, the 2nd of April, and that is Dan's Bakewell Tray Bake and Tweel Cigars class. So can you tell us a bit about what we're going to be doing?
Sure. I mean, we're going to be going fairly classic. I'm just doing a sort of regular Bakewell. I am going to do it with pastry, so fingers crossed we'll get it done in time. But we do have enough time to bake the tweels at the same time. Or as the French lady always makes fun of our set, she's like, it's not tweel, it's tuile, or something like that. I don't know. It turns out in baking, we often just say French words with an English accent and she just finds this hilarious. But it's tuile. I know,
well,
right?
We are English.
I'm very pan-European, very exotic.
Oh, is that what it's called? Okay.
No, I'm just English, honey. I did one of those 23andMe. I'm just English. But yes, so we will have time to do the tweels as well. We're only going to do the cigar-style tweels. We're going to dip them in a bit of chocolate and maybe some chopped hazelnuts if you like. But I found the key to shaping these, to be honest, is to bring your asbestos hands and we'll just sort of peel them up straight out of the thing and just quickly roll them between your hands. And that's how we get them. And they have been shared with the ladies at my coffee morning and they rather enjoyed them. So, I'm pleased with my little tray bake. And it might be another 2.5 hours, I'm afraid, Sarah, because, I think me and Jane are the worst offenders. We love to squeeze as much as possible in, don't we?
We do. I think we value for money, but it does sometimes run over, doesn't it?
Yeah. Value for money.
Is that what it's called? Value for money. I'll remember that. So if anybody wants to bring their asbestos hands to a value for money class with Dan, on Sunday the 2nd of April, we'll be doing our fifth class of our Bake Along Challenge with Dan's Bakewell Tray Bake and Tweel Cigars class. Now, back to our technical. Jane, how would you have fared in the Tweel Challenge?
Well, I don't know, because I've never made them. Because you watch so many cooking programmes now and everybody goes, well, I've made this Tweel. And everybody makes them different ways, don't they? Squid ink Tweels and just putting something, making honey Tweels yesterday. But I've never made them. I did look up Mary's recipe after I'd watched this and thought, oh, I might like to give them a go. It reminded me of rolling brandy snaps.
It did, yes.
So I think I would have known you could have popped them back in the oven if they got a little bit crisp, because brandy snap you have to put back in if they go a bit crispy. Unfortunately for you guys, you had to bake nine in your mould. Yes, I mean, Dan is waving a Tweel mould at us.
Obviously, no one at home can see this because this is a podcast, but you get these Tweel things. I've got some round ones and also some butterfly-shaped ones.
Oh, nice. Yes, they're nice.
If you've got a template, they're actually quite easy to make, but you can make them completely by hand. You can just sort of spread the mixture in a circle, but I think the templates definitely would have helped on this challenge.
They did have them, They did have templates on this challenge.
Yeah, but I'm giving away all my secrets, but normally I will chill the dough right down so it's easier to spread into the moulds, but you did not have time for that, I assume, Howard.
No. We didn't know to do that in any case, I don't think.
You would have had time, wouldn't you, in an hour and a half? Because it looks as though that dough doesn't take very long to whip up together.
I'm just feeling so depressed by this now.
Sweetie, don't be depressed.
I should have done it. Should I have just gone back the following year rather than even attempted to do Bake Off that year?
I know, Howard. Everybody loved you so much, and I think we all improve after Bake Off. Hopefully we do.
And also, I think Jane is the same. I applied three times, and I practiced, you know, really hard in between my attempts to get on, and I still didn't get any further than you did, Howard, so I wouldn't overthink it. I think you did a great job.
I absolutely agree.
Well, not in this challenge, of course, but generally.
Let's get on to the showstopper. That's a bit...
I thought it was interesting that Becca said at the beginning in her little interview, I felt it would be Tweels. Tweel? How would you pronounce it? Felt it would be. I mean, I thought, maybe. If she felt it was, maybe she should have practised a bit more. The claws came out there, didn't they? Sorry, Becca, I didn't mean it. But, I mean, if you felt it was...
They haven't included all the other times that people thought it was things that it wasn't. In Biscuit Week, they're like, what do you think the technical's going to be? And I'm like, I'm just sure it's going to be macaron. And of course it wasn't.
And of course it wasn't.
Yeah, so this is one time it came up.
Oh, dear, yeah, probably. But I loved Ruby's comment. I will not be thwarted by a sodding French biscuit.
Absolutely. That's the spirit.
Actually, she was thwarted by a sodding French biscuit. However, I love the comment. I think it was the most positive she's been, actually.
It really was. And Kimberly, at the end, she's like, I've learnt today how a Tweel should be. That's useful.
She did.
Like, you carry on, love. You carry on.
I liked Howard's comment as well. They were more like fag butts. Cigars. I thought that was funny.
Yes, we should just clarify. Cigarette butts.
Yes, cigarette butts. Yes. Sorry. For those, who might misunderstand.
Americans, it's confusing.
So the technical did prove very tricky for a lot of people as well. So it wasn't just you, Howard. It was definitely a tricky challenge. And the rating went as follows. We had Howard, unfortunately, down at the bottom in 8th position. Kimberly was 7th. Ruby was 6th. Becca, 5th. Rob was 4th. 3rd was Francis. 2nd was Glenn. And 1st was Christine. Now, Christine's comments were even bake, nice and thin, and a good snap. So that's very good. How thin do you have to spread these?
Very. About a millimetre or two, like very, very thin.
Ooh, very thin.
Yeah. But I have to ask, Howard, just out of morbid curiosity, forgive me for bringing up this trauma again, but you had a not great signature and then came bottom of the pack in the technical. Now, when that happened to me, I just sort of completely broke down and fell to pieces. How were you feeling in this moment? Were you just like, oh my God, I'm going home? Or how would you?
I got a bit of determination, which is very strange for me. Yeah. They didn't show it, but actually as we went into the showstopper, I was just like going, come on, you know, kind of willing myself to do. It was one of those bakes which I'd never actually done in, you know, a complete one at home.
Oh, right.
Yeah, I'd sort of done bits of it and, you know, attempted to do one. Up until a few days before this particular episode, I was ready for kind of phoning up and saying, I don't think I can do this, particularly on the showstopper. So I thought I'll be all right with the signature and the technical, whatever that is. But when it comes to showstopper, I don't think I can do it. So it kind of infused me or enthused me with the desire, I suppose, to just plow on, really.
Oh, good, good.
Because that's the spirit.
Mm. I said, under the pressure, some people in sort of lights a proverbial fire under their bums and some people crumble. And I have to say, I crumbled in mine. So I was very impressed that you kept fighting, Howard. It was an impressive showing.
Well, we will leave the horrors of the technical behind and we shall move on to some questions. Thank you, everybody who's written in with all your fabulous, fabulous questions. And let us get started. We have a question from Richard in Palm Springs in California. He says, of the Great British Bake Off themed podcasts, yours is the best.
Aww. Thank you, Richard.
Thank you,
That's
Richard.
That's not a question.
It is.
The question
What a lovely
out.
Question.
We love those questions. Thank you, Richard.
Thank you, Richard. Next. He says, you have some wonderful behind-the-scenes stories and your thoughts about each show are enjoyable to hear. And I've just finished watching Howard's season, so I'm delighted to hear that you're walking through each of these episodes. And the question follows, I don't have a proving drawer in my home kitchen, and I don't think many people do. I have mixed results getting dough to rise properly, so what's the best way to replicate a proving drawer in a home kitchen?
Right, you live in Palm Springs. Just cover it and leave it outside.
They've had a bad winter over there, so let's be... But when the temperature is low, let's...
Yes.
Okay, in the summer, it's like 40 outside all the time. And in the winter, it's like 25. Just leave it outside, Richard. What are you talking about? I happen to have the surface above my dishwasher gets incredibly warm. So you'll find that there'll be warm spots somewhere around your kitchen. That's what I would do with it.
So, Dan, it really isn't helpful because you perhaps
have
a better insulated... home appliances. It's not really helpful, is it? I mean, it's like me saying I stick mine on top of my bin because it's right next to a radiator. I mean,
that's not quite the same, Jane.
It is quite the same. I mean, how often, do you have to set your dishwasher running when you want to make bread?
Honey, I got two kids. The dishwasher is on all the time.
How would you say things now?
I always say don't put it anywhere warm. I was brought up, my mum used to put bread in the kind of airing cupboard or somewhere like that, you know. And actually, you run the risk if you kind of warm things up too quickly that it's going to deflate. So what I tend to do is just put it somewhere that's out of a draft. You don't want it in a, you know, necessarily cold place, but just so long as it's not in a draft, it's covered, it's in an ambient kind of temperature. You leave it until it's basically proved, until it's, I don't know why I went up really high there. Proved! It'll prove basically at any temperature, but I always say don't rush it. Don't put it on top of a radiator or don't put it anywhere where it's going to... inflate and then run the risk of deflating quite quickly.
Well, you're absolutely right, Howard. And of course, the longer it takes to prove, the more flavour you get into it. That's the thing. But if you are in a hurry and you haven't got a bin near a radiator.
What?
Well, anyway, I have a huge Ziploc plastic bag. So you can put it in one of those to keep it out of the draft. Or turn your oven on, which is what we try to do sometimes when we're doing donuts in a class, because we obviously only have 2 hours and we do a double proof on donuts. Turn the oven on to its very lowest setting. For my oven, it's 40 degrees centigrade. Once it's got a little bit warm, turn it off, but leave the light on in there. Make sure it's well covered so it doesn't dry out, and then pop it in that sort of draft-free, slightly warm space. So you can do that, but you don't need a proving drawer. You absolutely don't need a proving drawer at all.
No, you don't. I mean, it is bread rises. The factors are obviously a bit of heat helps, but it's time. And if you can leave it, then just leave it. And, you know, a lot of, for example, when you're making sourdough, you will often leave it in the fridge overnight to develop a stronger, more sort of sour flavour. So, you don't need a proving drawer. Most people in England do not have proving drawers. It's a very niche thing. And it's also for the fact that, you know, you have time limits and you can't use the excuse of it's a cold day. You need to be able to prove it. But yeah, I do not have a proving drawer at home and I just wait.
I don't think they were even called proving drawers before Bake Off. I think they were kind of plate warming drawers.
It could be.
Were they?
Yeah. And I think so. Somebody saw that they had another use. Yeah.
Put them in your hostess trolley. Does anybody remember hostess trolleys?
That would be actually, if I had one, I'd probably use it for warming plates more than I would for proving bread.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm about to make some focaccia for supper tomorrow night, and mine's going to stay in the fridge for 24 hours before I finally bring it out and finally prove it. So, yes, you can do it in any temperature. It's just a matter of time. So if you're in a hurry, slightly warm your oven, but don't keep the temperature constantly at 40. Turn it off so it's slightly above room temperature. But as like the guys have said, if you've got the time, just wait.
Lovely. Well, thank you very much, Richard, for your question. And I hope you're going to make some fabulously proved bread. Now, we have another question here from Ali in Raleigh, North Carolina. She also has praise for the podcast, which is great. Thank you very much. She says, I'm thrilled you're doing a rewatch of Series 4. You four are a great team. I listen to the podcast every week, and it's great to hear your takes on older seasons of The Bake Off that I enjoy so much. So thank you very much for that, Ali. We enjoy bringing it to you. And she says, instead of a question, I'd like to share a hump about how Paul and Mary treated Frances this season. The judges criticised her style of a substance so harshly, especially in the quarterfinals, that they made her question the way she baked. But good for Frances for proclaiming that she was not going to change her process for them. Even in the semi-finals, Mary scoffed when Frances began to describe the vegetable garden theme of her canapés, but both judges ended up loving the result. And then in the final, they complimented Ruby by comparing her pie to something Frances would have done, so very mixed messages. Obviously, Frances triumphed in the end and was right to listen to her intuition and continue to be herself. I agree with what you all said in the first podcast episode that the visual standard Frances established changed Bake Off moving forward. Do we think that this is something they're still doing? I mean, we have mentioned in this episode a bit earlier on that they keep getting at Frances for being style of a substance.
I think it's just Frances's artistic vision was always so strong. I think the judges considered that she'd made that her priority rather than the baking. And I think that's what they didn't want her to do. They wanted her to make the baking the priority and the sort of design the sort of secondary aspect to it. And I would tend to agree with that, but that speaks to what I care about. And I care a lot about the baking technique rather than I do about the artistic vision. But I dare say there's a happy medium. Would you say, Howard?
Yeah, I think so. But I have to say that I think with Frances, we've talked about in earlier episodes how we don't get to see in this particular series, certainly in the earlier episodes, what's actually going into people's bakes. So we have to rely an awful lot on what we see visually. We don't get the kind of rundown about ingredients or techniques or anything like that. And Frances was incredible on some of her techniques and things, but we just didn't get to hear about them.
Oh, that's really interesting, isn't it? Because you're right, we haven't really seen enough about flavours and things, and I didn't write down what Frances biscuits in this Showstopper Challenge were made of. And you sort of go back and look and think, oh, did I miss that? And we've done that with a lot, haven't we? We've gone back and gone, do we know what the flavours were on that or what the techniques were? And I just think sometimes they get a bee in their bonnet. We mustn't forget that although it is a baking programme, it's not an instructional baking programme. We can't taste it. We haven't got some super chef going, yum, this is delicious, and it tastes of chopped coriander and elephant's toenails or something.
Note, Paul and Mary are not super chefs. Jane's just throwing it out there.
No, no, that's not what I mean. You know, shut up, Dan. We mustn't forget, it is reality TV and it's entertaining, and you don't want to look at something boring. I will be the first one to say taste trumps everything. So if you're a home baker and you turn out a delicious cake, don't worry about making it look like a showstopper, because people won't come back to something that doesn't taste nice, but they want to eat. They want to eat first and foremost. But on a television show like this, we do want to see something gorgeous, don't we? We want to see something a bit interesting. We want to see something to spark our own imagination. So they have to strike a balance. Now, I've never tasted any of Francis's stuff, but I remember when I watched the show first time round, how impressed I was with her artistic ability. I think it's gone a little bit too far now. We concentrate constantly on whether whatever they're making looks like, I don't know, a garden lawnmower or something. I thought they were particularly hard on Frances, but Howard should be the one to tell us what her food tasted like. But if they weren't then tasting each other's food, we can't even get an insight on that, can we?
Well, thank you, everybody, for your questions. Thank you, Ali and Richard. Prompted a lot of debate there, which is always fun to have. So now we lead into the showstopper. Now, the showstopper we had this time was a biscuit tower, minimum 30 centimetres tall, with lots of lovely decorative biscuits. And we had 4 hours to do that. Now, leading off our last question we just had there about being a bit hard on Francis, do we think they were a bit harsh on Francis again when they just talked about, you just made a stack of biscuits? Wasn't that the challenge?
Well, right. OK, so first of all, this episode was a fantastic showcase for Mel's awkward glances, which I enjoyed a lot. That was the highlight of the episode for me. But one thing I thought that was a very fair criticism of Frances's showstopper was that Paul said the biscuits are beautiful and everything, but it's, you know, collapsed 4 hours and you've made a load of biscuits. OK, and yes, the challenge was to make a biscuit tower. But I think if you look at Frances, which was just sort of a stack of biscuits and there wasn't much structure to it, and you compare it to something like Howard's, which I thought was absolutely magnificent. I thought you absolutely outdid yourself there, Howard. And I love the way you had the biscuits dripping over the edge of the tin that then created the upward spikes. So that was inspired. Some like simple technique, but really effective. So I thought that was fantastic. So yours, I felt, fit the brief. And I know you struggled with understanding the brief, Howard, on some of these signatures. But I thought you understood exactly what they were looking for in the brief. And that was beautiful and had a good style to it, but it was also structural and filled the brief and showed 4 hours worth of work, where I would say Francis's didn't. And yes, you could say, oh, it's a shame it fell over. And yes, it is. But then having one stick going through the centre of everything is not a good structural component. And was that stick edible? Maybe it was edible. I don't know.
Basically, almost like a breadstick, like a biscuit breadstick. So very, very fragile in the first place.
So yeah, not really a good plan. I mean, like, artistically lovely, but not really a very good plan. How did you feel you'd done, Howard? Did you feel yours stacked up well, or were you impressed by anyone else's?
I think you get to that point where because I was at the back of the tent, and there was a microwave or something just in the corner, just behind me, and people kept running across the tent to the microwave, and you'll know that the floor in the tent is actually like a sprung floor. So if people
it's a bit wobbly.
It's wobbly. And you're trying to construct a biscuit tower with people running backwards and forwards to the microwave. I'm just thinking, this is a nightmare. But I thought, well, if it's holding up okay and people are running backwards and forwards, I've achieved some structural stability here.
I thought it was just genius. It was brilliant. Yeah. From the very first design, I thought it was going to be structurally sound. I just thought the whole thing was so clever.
Do you know, the reason why I almost phoned up and said I'm not coming this week is because the stupidity of it was a typical Howard moment. When I was doing a practice run of this, I was measuring out the individual biscuits, sort of 7 centimetres by 7 centimetres, cutting them out. And then I'd get the next one, 7 centimetres by 7 centimetres. And I suddenly thought, do you know, if I cut a template out for these, I don't need to measure each one individually. And it's like, I must have saved myself at least an hour doing
Tell me, what was your third tea flavour? I'd got Earl Grey, green tea. Did you have a third?
Yeah, I'd got 4 tea flavours. So the green tea was the little upturned roofs. So,
okay.
Yeah, I'd got an Earl Grey, Lapsang Souchong, and a Rose Pouchong.
Oh, I didn't get those.
Yeah, no, I don't think they mentioned it. Yeah.
Although Mary said it was a boring flavour. Yes. Did you feel like reaching across the table and punching her on the nose?
You can't say that.
It wasn't boring, because Paul had already said, hadn't he, that I'd been very clever in getting that subtle tea flavour.
Yeah.
It's like, no, it's got flavour in it. Might be subtle.
What's boring about it? That was a very odd thing to say. Well, there were some slightly odd comments from Mary all the way through, or maybe it was Paul, I can't remember. I think going back to Ruby's signature, it was like, excellent, but the textures are wrong. That was all we got. Yeah. It was like, do you want to? I mean, maybe he did elaborate in the tent, but we didn't get to see why. Odd comments.
Oh, flavour's excellent, that was. Flavour's excellent, but textures are wrong. Mm. So, I mean, to be fair, you can have that. Yeah, but I thought there was an edge to Mary this week. I thought to say it was boring was mean.
I think she was getting a bit tired.
Yeah. Bless.
Maybe. But yeah, tea is supposed to have a delicate flavour. You don't want to be, like, if it's too much, it's going to be all bitter and unpleasant. So.
I loved your timing, your comic timing, Howard. You probably didn't even intend it, but when you were, it's like, well, people seem to be impressed. It was my mum and dad. That was what I thought was.
That was cute. Yeah.
It was really cute.
Now, for this showstopper, we did miss a bit of information that I actually gleaned from Wikipedia when it came to the flavours of Rob's biscuits. I don't think we got a lot of information on that or on Becca's biscuits either. But yet there was a 12-second pause between the judges tucking into Ruby's showstopper and then them having their comments. So we could have taken some of that time back. 12 seconds.
Did you time it?
I timed it. It was so long.
I think I noticed a big pause, actually, and did wonder about that.
Really long. So I wonder what season it'll be before we get everybody's information for their showstopper.
I think Rob's were chocolate and then like citrus, lemon and orange.
Yeah.
I think that's
were they? Okay. Yeah, I haven't written anything down.
I was shocked, but I thought Rob's looked amazing, but it seemed like they did not like the biscuits at all.
I think it was partly to do with, although he'd created the structure, which was, you know, on brief and everything, the way that he'd kind of stuck it together was, there was a lot of kind of edible glue in there, wasn't there?
Was that isomalt?
Yeah, and then fondant as well. So you weren't even getting all of the sense of the tower of biscuits. It was covered with fondant, wasn't it?
It's a hard balance to strike because, you know, the delicious biscuits, like Kimberly made the Viennese Whirls, they don't have the structure. And that was, I think those were two people who made the wrong choices at the other ends of the spectrum. Kimberly sort of went for the lovely flavours and textures and they did not serve the structure. And Rob, conversely, made a wonderful structure, but the biscuits were not delicious. So I don't think either of them bathed themselves in glory in this showstopper.
I think Rob's card was marked from the day before, really, because Paul said it was scruffy. Yeah, I think so. Paul said, I can't remember the exact word he used, but he just said it was a bit scruffy or a bit... And I thought, frankly, it doesn't look any more scruffy than... you know, Glenn's didn't look perfect. I wanted to sort his icing out, and Kimberly certainly didn't. And I just got the impression that already they thought that Rob was going home, because it was a pretty impressive Dalek. I wouldn't have used edible glue. The isomalt, there is no flavour at all. Make some caramel if you want to stick it together, or use royal icing. That stuff is just for making fancy decorations and not sticking edible things together.
It's not for eating, is it?
It's really not for eating. I mean, it's edible, but it's not for eating. But actually, the edible glue you buy online is very useful for sticking flowers on cakes and things like that. However, that's just something completely different. I thought it looked great. So there was either a problem with his recipe when he sent it in which case surely somebody would have said, we really need to see all the biscuits, or it was acceptable. And I thought it looked great. And it was such a shame, I thought, that Mary was a bit harsh as well, saying that he hadn't actually improved as he went along. He had sort of started at a high level and not gone anywhere. I just thought they were a bit mean to Rob this time.
Sometimes I find the visual critiques really inconsistent. I thought the Dalek looked great. I didn't think it looked clumsy at all. I thought it looked wonderful.
Oh, clumsy, that was the word, yes.
But then there was, I'm not going to say who or what it was, but there was someone on my season, their bake went up, and I remember thinking it looked absolutely awful, and the judges praised how beautiful it was. So, you know, sometimes I'm just really confused about what they're seeing that I'm not seeing. But, you know, it obviously beauty's in the eye of the beholder. It's all subjective and everything else. But I thought that Dalek was great. I don't really know what their problem was.
I wonder again if the editing of the show does come into play here, since the editors know that Rob's going home. They sort of pick his worst comments to show.
Oh, of course.
So for the viewer, it looks like he's going home this week. We've seen his bad comments. We're not surprised.
But I got to the end of the episode and I genuinely didn't know who was going home. And I dare say, like, when you're there, it's easy. I mean, I know because I was there once. When you're there, it's much easier to keep track of who's doing well and who's doing badly. But as a viewer, I had no idea who was going home. And I thought Kimberly was going home. But obviously, because I've seen the whole show, I knew that she obviously wasn't. And I couldn't remember who had gone home that week. And I thought, well, it's definitely not Howard, because I know Howard gets further. But I couldn't figure out who was going. I was actually shocked.
You say that you do know in the tent, but how many times have we said we look back and watch the edit and go, oh, goodness, I didn't realise I was in the danger spot. So I don't think you always do know when you're in the tent. I mean, you have some idea. I thought Frances was going because, you know, in the end, she did not fulfil the brief. Her 30 centimetres fell apart because of sort of slightly dodgy design. And in our year, and a poor old Val went home because she didn't manage to get everything out of the oven and on the thing. So she didn't produce the quantity that was supposed to be there. Frances, I don't think, achieved the brief. So that should have trumped everybody who did achieve the 30 centimetres, in my opinion. So you just don't know on what criteria they always judge.
Frances had already done pretty well in the technical and had actually done well in the signature.
Oh, yeah, she did that, yeah.
Rob had a really bad signature, but I was surprised. I was surprised.
I know, it gets to the stage where actually they're all pretty close, aren't they? And it's hard for anybody to go home and we know how hard it is to pick sometimes. I want to do a shout out for Glenn's macarons. Mm-hmm. Oh, spellings everywhere and pronunciations everywhere.
Yeah.
Macaroons. But his macaron looked amazing. Amazing, didn't they? He obviously dried them long enough. They popped up. They were beautifully smooth. Somebody said they were exceptional. And they were. I thought they were excellent. And I thought it was very sweet with Becca saying, because he wanted to put some raspberry powder on, and she said, oh, that might burn, you know, put it on afterwards. So it was the first real bit of helping each other out in the tent.
I thought that was very sweet, because I'm throwing shade at myself here. If I had a good trick up my sleeve, I might not have led him down the wrong path, but I probably wouldn't have told him my good trick.
Well, that's because you're mean. That's because you're so mean.
I know. I thought that was very sweet of her, actually. Very sweet of her.
But yes, I did too.
They both produced really, really nice macaron. And, do you know what's quite surprising was that Glenn said he wasn't very good at them. He wasn't a master of them. And yet his were beautiful. They looked stunning from the outside. They weren't hollow. They were a bit chewy, but not crazy chewy. I think he really nailed those. I didn't love the overall view of his Helter Skelter, but after, you know, the sort of quality of the biscuits that he produced, I wasn't surprised that he was safe, because that is tricky to do. That is a lot of technique and skill there.
Glenn did a great job, actually, and the macaron were fantastic. But we haven't talked about Christine's. I mean, Christine, I think, did an absolutely stunning job. When you look at the wonderful Tom Hovey illustrations, you think, well, it's not going to look like that, is it? And her final bake looked like the illustration. You know, I wouldn't have liked lavender. I've never actually tried cooking with lavender, to be honest. I just... it doesn't appeal. I know you guys like it.
It's nice with lemon.
Maybe it is. I don't know. I just thought her clock was stunning. Stunning. She got it finished. It looked beautiful. They said flavours were good and the texture was excellent. Yeah, good on Christine. She had a stonkingly good week, didn't she?
She did. Do you know what I loved about hers as well? And this is no shade to you, Howard. But hers was constructed and tall, but it came apart. You didn't have to unglue everything. Yeah. And I thought that was inspired, because not only was it beautiful, but you could actually comfortably, easily eat it. And I thought that was genius. And I loved the little top section. I thought that was amazing. So I thought others were maybe more structurally interesting, but it was actually really edible. In terms of you could serve that and it would work, right? Because you know what it's like when you make a cake or whatever, and someone's like, "Oh, I don't want to ruin it. I don't want to damage it. It looks too good to eat." I hate that, by the way. Don't ever say that to a baker. It looks too good to eat. Please don't ever say that. But some of the, you know, like to eat Howard's, you kind of would have to start snapping it apart and destroying it. With Christine's, you could sort of take it apart a little bit at a time without ruining the lovely top piece. So I loved that. I thought that was inspired. And again, I probably wouldn't have thought of that.
Although she me had used royal icing, hers was just decorative, wasn't it? So it was just the little snow drips. You're absolutely right. The construction, the brick construction was independent, so you could take pieces away. Yeah.
Jenga. It was like Jenga. So what do you guys think of Ruby's, the upside down ice cream? I think I needed them to say it was like an upside down ice cream for me to go, oh, that's what it is.
Yeah, I think the visual wasn't as strong as maybe, but it looks like the elements were good in and of themselves. So we'll have to take the judge's word for that.
Comment here. When she was using her hands to stick whatever that pink stuff was it icing or something, to get it, she was saying, well, because it's round, I can't use a palette knife. So she was getting handfuls of this pink stuff and slapping it all together. Don't we decorate cakes and round cakes and use palette knives? I wasn't sure that I liked her technique.
No. Also, so you can get, if you need to do like a rounded edge, you can use a little bit of acetate to sort of bend to smooth it. Or, you know, you get bench scrapers, you get little kidney bean shaped ones that are flexible and you can bend, and you can use those to shape.
Yes.
It's just a little bit. I mean, listen, no one's going to see if you're doing it alone in your kitchen, but it's a little bit more hygienic to just use something with a rounded edge to smooth out. So, yeah, it wasn't the most attractive. I don't want to think of, I mean, Ruby's fingers dragging all through it, you know.
I just thought it was an interesting technique. It's made me
sometimes you have to remember that it's going to be on TV and people are going to see it and think, maybe, maybe not.
Fortunately, they didn't show us her licking her fingers, which might have equally have put me off. But it was an interesting technique.
Well, I think we have mentioned everybody there, and we've sort of alluded to, if you listen very closely, we've alluded to who goes home this week. And of course, it was Rob. He didn't have, well, he didn't have the best baked signature, let's say. And his ranking in the technical was actually pretty good. He was middle of the pack. So that was actually pretty good. But then apparently his Dalek biscuits were okay and bland. So it was time for Rob to say goodbye, unfortunately. But his parting comments were lovely. He said he wanted to win Starbaker once, not get kicked out in week one, and win a technical. And he did all that. And that was really, really sweet that he managed to tick off his bucket list before he said goodbye. Howard, you got some interesting comments from Mary as well, didn't you, at the end?
Did you say dead lucky? Yes.
Sorry,
yeah,
Mary.
Right.
Consider yourself told.
Yeah.
Looking back at it now, I think it was a fair decision. He messed up the technical aspect of the signature and he messed up the technical aspect of the showstopper. So I kind of get the reasoning. But I also think that was a very believable moment from Rob. I had sort of similar aspirations. I was like, if I can get Starbaker once and I can make it more than, you know, I can make it halfway through the competition, I'll leave with my dignity. Do you know what I mean? Mm. I'll do a good enough job. And you know the chance of you winning are pretty small. I mean, Jane would disagree, obviously. Jane was like, I nearly won.
I wouldn't.
But I think that was very real. I didn't hope to be first in technical as well. I thought asking for Starbaker was also pushing it. But yeah, I think that's nice. And you can leave with your dignity and feeling proud of what you've done in the tent. So yeah, fair play to Rob. But it was a shame to see him go. But I think overall, probably the right decision.
And of course, the lovely Christine was our star baker, I believe, for the second time. Her beautiful mixed berry and almond crumble got fantastic comments in the signature challenge. She did rather well in the technical, coming first, so that's very good. And she had, as we've said, a beautiful showstopper. I think Mary picked her up on everybody having an equal portion of shortbread when they tucked into it, so Mary definitely picked up on that as well. So all glowing positive comments for Christine. A deserved star baker, do we think?
Yes, I mean, I think absolutely. Christine was amazing. So very well deserved. And I think, you know, at the end, you know, you go, well, it could have been. No, it was Christine all the way for me this time.
Well, do you know, I thought it could have been Glenn, because I think Glenn did pretty well in technical. And if he, the techniques that he managed to get in that Tiffin Tray Bake thing were amazing. And obviously, he did pretty well in the showstopper as well, but just not quite Christine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, need more coffee.
So there we go. We lose Rob, but we get another star baker in Christine for Biscuits and Tray Bake Week. Not something I think we've repeated in later series. We've just stuck with biscuits, but we'll get our tray bake in there somehow. Well, thank you so much, everybody, for listening. As always, Jane, Dan and Howard, thank you so much for joining us. Do not forget to join us for our lots of online classes we have, and especially for Dan's Bakewell Tray Bake and Tweel Cigars class on Sunday, the 2nd of April. We also have lots of fabulous online classes, so please do check out our website at bakewithalegend.com and click on our online classes. And don't forget, you can use the code PODCAST to get 10% off your next class. So Dan, Jane and Howard, we'll see you all next week, and to everybody listening as well, see you soon. Bye-bye.
You just heard a Stripped Media production.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.